This is Christopher Walken, and you're listening to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast. Valuable fantasy football advice with some entertainment thrown in. Hey, Todd, it wouldn't kill you to play some competitive sports once in a while, would it?
Yes, time for some action. Time for some action. Welcome to the Fantasy Football Helpers Podcast. I'm your host, George Banco. Yesterday, we began our talk on wide receiver ADP, and today will be part two of the podcast for wide receivers. So, without further ado, let's just get right into it. Josh Mensch, what's happening, man? What do you want to talk about today?
You know, we got a lot of receivers to talk about. We touched on a few guys yesterday, but today there's a couple veterans that I see that are getting drafted in the first six rounds that I feel might cause some headaches for fantasy owners this year.
Absolutely. Well, let's get right to it. Andre Johnson of the Colts was one guy in particular that you singled out. So what were you thinking of him? Do you think he's overvalued at this point?
You know, the talent is still there for Andre Johnson. And we had a podcast a little while ago, and I said that Johnson could be a bounce-back candidate this year because of his... now that he's playing with a quarterback like Andrew Luck. But I still think he might be getting a little bit overdrafted. FantasyFootballCalculator.com has Johnson as the 18th wide receiver taken right now, just in the middle of the fourth round. And he is just on the edge of guys like Julian Edelman, Sammy Watkins, and Golden Tate, where there might be a little bit more upside for guys like that. Just due to Johnson's age and inability to make an impact down the field at this stage of his career. But I do think Johnson still could carve out a role in PPR leagues, taking over that Reggie Wayne type role in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and I think the intrigue with Andre Johnson is he finally has a quarterback that people consider to be very competent in Andrew Luck. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily a diss on Matt Schaub. I know Matt Schaub kind of flamed out, but for a while I considered Matt Schaub to be a very competent quarterback.
Yeah, Matt Schaub was never a bad quarterback when in his time in Houston. He put up a few 30-touchdown seasons, but to say that Schaub and Luck are in even close to the same class of a quarterback is far-fetched. So maybe I think the efficiency for Johnson might see a little bit of an increase, but when you got weapons around you like T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, and the first round selection, Philip Dorsett, you got to think that Andrew Luck's still going to spread the ball around. And you still have the tight ends there in Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen, who are good pass catchers as well. So there's plenty of options there in Indy.
It's a great point, and that could be something that maybe, you know, curtails Andre Johnson's value as well, considering in Houston, you know, he was always the guy. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins came in at one point, but you know, he was still pretty young when Johnson was there for the first couple seasons. And you also had Owen Daniels, who, you know, when he was healthy, he was a fine asset. But other than that, Houston never really found a number two receiver. Who were some of the guys? I think, was it Kevin White or
You know, there was a few guys there that he was tried for a long time.
Yes, Jacoby Jones was there at one point,
yes,
too. Right?
That's the name I was thinking. Jacoby Jones. They had such high hopes for him, but he just... all he is a special teams ace.
And exactly. And that's what they did.
I kind of liken him to the Josh Huff comparison in Philadelphia, where he can play in a pinch if you really need him to, but he's going to make his biggest asset or his biggest impact when he is on special teams.
Absolutely. Now, also the big thing with Andre Johnson is the departure of Reggie Wayne and what he kind of used to bring to the table, and Andre Johnson kind of filling in that role. So Wayne was kind of known as like the target machine for Indianapolis. So Andre Johnson, a great, you know, possession receiver. I mean, look at his target numbers right now. He had 147 targets last year, 181 in 2013, and 164 in 2012. So when you factor in, you know, Reggie Wayne also basically being one of the most targeted receivers in Indy in the last couple years, I think that's why people are so excited about Andre.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, when you got a quarterback like Andrew Luck, you're not going to hold him back from making plays with his arm. And he's the only quarterback to post 40 touchdowns last year. So I could there be a little bit of a bounce back season for him? Sure, but I just think at the point where Johnson's getting drafted, I just think there might be better value, especially if you do end up going wide receiver with your first couple picks.
Absolutely. Now, who are the two guys you think are kind of more valuable that are being drafted behind Andre Johnson? Or if you have more, you can name them more.
Just looking at right behind him, there's Julian Edelman proved to be a really good PPR asset last year. I know that we have to deal with the 4-game suspension for Tom Brady, but once Brady comes back, you got to think that Edelman is going to take that Wes Welker role that he did have last year. So I still like Julian Edelman. I liked Jarvis Landry a little bit better until they went out and reloaded their wide receiving core. But there's still guys down the list where you have. We talked about Allen Robinson yesterday. We talked about Nelson Aguilar yesterday. Who, if you don't want to invest a top 5-round pick in a veteran receiver, I still think you can put up pretty similar numbers with a mid round to late round pick.
Absolutely. I mean, Andre Johnson is, he's going to be 34 in a month, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I agree with you, but I do love the quarterback situation, and that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of the guys you mentioned who have better value might not be, because Andrew Luck is just a guy who's going to be as consistent as any quarterback in the league. So that's something you can't get from a lot of those other wide receivers in terms of their quarterback situation.
Right, and I had done a statistical thing with T.Y. Hilton and the other Colts receivers, and with the remaining, other than T.Y. Hilton, so between Philip Dorsett, Johnson, and
Moncrief,
they have around 145 receptions and 1,800 yards and 9 touchdowns split between those three guys. So could Johnson see a third of that, maybe see 700 yards and 4 touchdowns? Yeah, but I just don't think that equals a top 5-round pick in fantasy football.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, I think he would be a fantastic wide receiver too to have in redraft leagues. Definitely don't want to have him be a number one, but I don't think he's really being drafted quite like a number one receiver. So I don't think
No, at 18, you're getting him just as like a low-end wide receiver too, which it could be perfect there.
Yeah.
Even if you can land a guy like Johnson as your flex or wide receiver 3, I think that would be a big asset to have.
Yeah, and in PPR leagues, his value is definitely like one of the best. I'd say he's borderline wide receiver 1 in PPR leagues just because of his reception totals. You know they're going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's just a big receiver. He doesn't. He's a guy who I think you could see kind of like the Anquan Boldin role. He's just a big receiver. So he's going to be able to still make catches with his body because it's going to be tough for corners to get around him. And that's always been one of his big reasons why he's been successful anyway. So, So I agree with you. I think he's a solid wide receiver 2 overall. But let's get to some other people because we just spent 10 minutes on Andre Johnson, which is totally fine with me. I have no problem with it. But let's give some of these other receivers some love. I know you wanted to talk about Cecil Shorts on Jacksonville. That was another interesting one that you said.
Actually, Cecil Shorts is actually in Houston now.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, he is in Houston.
That's why I brought up the combination of Jalen Strong and Cecil Shorts. It's not for sure who is going to be the starter opposite DeAndre Hopkins. Obviously, Hopkins is the wide receiver 1 and the guy who will be the main fantasy wide receiver in that group. But I still think when you invest a top 2-round pick in a guy like Jalen Strong, I think you're going to see him and Cecil Shorts, maybe not Cecil Shorts right away, or maybe not Strong right away, but I still think they're going to be able to produce in that offense.
Yeah, so you kind of think Jalen Strong is a project and Cecil Shorts is going to be the possession guy right out of the gate?
Yeah, what I see right away, I would think that Shorts is going to win that the starting job opposite Hopkins, but eventually, once Strong gets a little bit more comfortable with that offense and starts getting the necessary conditioning, which Bill O'Brien had already complained a little bit about with his rookie minicamp. So I think once Strong gets in the fold and starts learning the offense, I think he could see his playing time increase, and we'll see Shorts move down into the slot.
Yeah, I think Jalen Strong is a guy we're going to just have to keep on the waiver wire for like the first 5 weeks of the season, and just
Definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't suggest drafting him right now, unless you're in a very, very deep league, 14, 16 teams maybe. But
yeah.
He's just a guy that I think you can keep your eye on.
Yeah.
When he was in Arizona State, he was a definite red zone threat. He's got that big body that when you're in the red zone, it just comes in handy. So
yeah, absolutely.
You have DeAndre Hopkins, who's going to take over that vertical role and take over the DeAndre Johnson role that he had filled. So I just think when you invest a top two round pick in a wide receiver, you're going to see that guy get his opportunity sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a really good point. And Jalen Strong is not a receiver that I'm super in the know about. He was not a guy I researched a lot, so I've heard various things about him, but overall it's kind of a mixed bag, so he's just a guy that I'm going to have to keep an eye on. But all those things you just mentioned is really intriguing, so I definitely think we should keep an eye on him for sure. Here's a guy I think is being overvalued currently, and I know I could be totally wrong on this one. This one could totally bite me. But Davante Adams on the Green Bay Packers.
I completely agree.
You do? You think that 41 is way too high for him?
Yeah. I was all over the Davante Adams hype train once we thought that Randall Cobb was going to leave for Miami or Oakland, whoever was going to throw him the biggest amount of money. But Cobb shocked me when he decided to go back to Green Bay, and he pissed off a lot of fantasy football owners that had Davante Adams sitting in the wings waiting to take over as the number two wide receiver in Green Bay.
Yeah, and obviously Davante Adams, that huge game he had in the playoffs last year, kind of gave people an inkling on what he could possibly be for the Packers. But I also think that, you know, Davante Adams did kind of benefit from having such a great group of receivers around him with Jordy Nelson and Cobb, and like people kind of would forget about him, or he would draw, you know, the team's worst defensive back, or even draw probably a linebacker sometime there. So now, right now, here's the depth chart. You still got Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. Obviously Eddie Lacy is a pretty good PPR guy, and you know they did go out and get Ty Montgomery as a rookie as well. So there's some competition there, and I don't understand why people are drafting him ahead of guys like Allen Robinson, Dante Moncrief, you know, even Nelson Aguilar, and Pierre Garçon, and yeah, Breshad Perriman. All those guys to me have way more upside in terms of target potential than Adams does.
I completely agree. Last year, Adams had like two or three good games.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were all against. It was when Green Bay had Nelson and Cobb locked up by some bigger. It was when they had New England. So Cobb and Nelson were dealing with Brandon Browner and Darrell Revis. So
yeah.
there's a reason why Davante Adams put six receptions for 121 yards up against those guys.
Absolutely. And, you know, against Dallas, he had a really good game in the playoffs. That was, like, his big one. He had seven receptions, 117 yards, and one touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was able to come out of the woodwork at times. It was nice to see him have such a big game in a meaningful situation, though, against Dallas in the playoffs. That was nice to see.
It's true. It was nice to see. The biggest thing with Adams is the drops.
Yeah.
He dropped so many passes last year, and even on his tape at Fresno State, it was the biggest issue with him. He has the physical tools, but he has some pretty spotty hands. And when you got a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, who is if not the most accurate quarterback in football, you got to be able to catch the ball. And if he continues to struggle hanging on to it, I think you can see guys like Janis and Ty Montgomery eat into Adams' plating time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know who had the most drops last year?
Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah, it was a three-way tie, actually. So, yeah, Kelvin was one, and then Demaryius Thomas and Steve Smith Sr. on Baltimore. So,
yeah.
That's interesting. Steve Smith had the fewest amount of targets in that one, so he had the worst percentage. But I was surprised at seeing those numbers, for sure.
Also, so I know last year that Adams was a rookie, but in the last seven, 8 weeks, he had two targets, four targets, and then he had the 11 against New England, and then 4, 4, and 4 to finish out the year. So
yeah,
he still has Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson ahead of him, so I don't see how people could still be drafting him and thinking that he's going to post wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 numbers when he's shown that he's not going to be as involved in the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, he might see a slight uptick because, you know, Jordy Nelson is getting older now.
A little bit of an uptick in snaps, but...
Yeah, that's another big thing.
More valuable players on that roster to have.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, that's one thing you always have to look at in fantasy football, by the way, everyone, is snap count, which is a big part of, you know, whether a guy is going to be productive if he's on the field enough. So, also, Football Outsiders is a great source for that if you ever want to check that site out. All right, well, let's talk about let's maybe go one more receiver here real quick, and then we'll talk about tight ends, because I really wanted to talk about Mike Wallace on Minnesota. Now, this is your team, Josh. So
yes, this is.
You have some good knowledge, I'm sure, that you'd like to share about it. And obviously, with North Turner and that vertical offense, what do you think of Mike Wallace with the sophomore stud potentially in Teddy Bridgewater?
In Minnesota, we have been longing for the quarterback wide receiver duo that could strike fear in defenses since we had the three deep of Randy Moss, Chris Carter, and Jake Reed back in 1998. But this isn't anywhere near the talent that we had on that roster. But
thank you for saying that.
Yeah, Mike Wallace is the game-changing receiver, or the deep threat that this offense has been looking for. We are still trying with Cordarrelle Patterson to get him in a place where he can be a consistent receiving option, but Mike Wallace was a guy in Pittsburgh who was one of the best deep threats in football.
Yes.
In his 3 years with Pittsburgh, he averaged 19.4 yards reception, 21 yards, and then 16.6 in his last season. So he can get down the field. When he went down to Miami, it was just a terrible match with him and Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill succeeds more at the short to intermediate areas, which is why guys like Jarvis Landry took off in the second half of the season. But in Minnesota, we're very excited about the progress that Teddy Bridgewater made last season.
Yes.
In the last 6 or so weeks, he was a 60% completion percentage guy on throws over 20 yards downfield. So that was one of the big knocks on Teddy coming out of college, that he didn't have the accuracy to throw the ball deep. So to see that improvement, and when you get a guy like Adrian Peterson back into the backfield taking pressure and
that's
coverage
a good point
away from the defense, I think Mike Wallace could be in for a big bounce-back year this year.
Absolutely, and that kind of leads into my next question. Do you think Teddy Bridgewater has the arm to kind of maximize the talent of Mike Wallace?
Yeah, I do. Throwing a deep ball isn't all about arm strength. And that's the thing that Teddy dealt with last year. He has more than enough arm strength to make every throw you ask him to. It's more about timing and getting in a rhythm with your receivers. And last year, in the early part of the year, when Minnesota played teams like Tampa Bay and when they were in Buffalo, Bridgewater missed a couple of wide-open deep balls. But they were also trying to get a guy in Charles Johnson, who wasn't even on the team at the start of the year, and guys like Jarius Wright and Adam Thielen into the roster, into the starting lineup. So Bridgewater never really had a chance to work with the receivers that he was throwing to on game days and get that timing down in practice. So with a full off season and with a guy with Adrian Peterson behind you, I think Teddy is going to be have a lot of opportunities to throw against single coverage, which could do wonders for him.
Absolutely. Now, Mike Wallace, my one big thing with him also, besides the Teddy Bridgewater thing, is his age. Now, I mean, he's not a super old receiver. You know, he's 28 years old, but
yeah, entering his 29. He's going to be 29 at the start of this year.
Yeah, but we do consider, you know, him to be a kind of a one-trick pony. Just running down the field is his M.O. Now, is there any way he maybe loses even a little bit of a step and is no longer that effective at running the deep route? I don't think that's the case, but I'm just spitballing.
I don't think so. Last year when I watched his games with Miami, he was still able to get by defenders no problem.
Yeah.
It was more of Tannehill's inability to hit him. Last year, I wrote an article about Wallace's transition to Minnesota, and while Wallace was down in Miami last year, he had 24 deep balls thrown to him, and of those, I think it said only 7 of them were deemed catchable. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if you get a quarterback who's even able to put it near a guy like Wallace, you'll see the efficiency on those routes go up a little bit more.
All right, cool. So, yeah, Mike Wallace, now, ADP-wise, do you think he's properly valued where he is, or would you take him higher or lower?
He's currently drafted just about the 7th round, or just at the start of the 7th round, next to guys like Vincent Jackson and Michael Floyd and even his teammate Charles Johnson. Yeah, that's probably a good place for him. I'd probably put him just around that same area. I'd probably take a guy like Amari Cooper over him just because of his target potential and the fact that he's going to be the number one receiver in Oakland.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still think once you get down into the 7th, 8th round, if you're looking for a wide receiver 3 and Mike Wallace is sitting there on the board, I think you could do a lot worse.
All right, there you have it. Shout out to Mike Wallace fans out there. Just maybe try to get him a little bit earlier if you can, because I agree with you. I'm excited for him, too. That deep ball potential is definitely there. All right, let's talk about tight ends real quick for like the next 3-4 minutes of the podcast, real fast. Obviously, Rob Gronkowski had a great season last year, going to be the number one guy again this year.
He's okay.
He's fine. He's only, you know, one of the most probably athletically gifted tight ends compared to a size that I've maybe ever seen. Also just an incredible football player in terms of just toughness and ability to just run guys over. It's just incredible to watch. Now, I found this interesting looking at the ADP for some of the tight ends. I see guys going like way higher than I would normally take them. You have Jordan Cameron going 7, and you also have Owen Daniels going 8, which is baffling to me, but that's obviously
someone
the Denver.
Someone needs to explain to me how Jordan Cameron is going before a guy like Antonio Gates.
Right. Well, obviously the Antonio Gates thing, there's been reports of him basically not being nearly as much a part of the offense as he was last year. He wasn't actually supposed to be that much of a part of the offense as people thought last year either, but it was mostly because they just needed him. They didn't really have any other options. So
right, we've been waiting for Ladarius Green to take over the starting tight end job in San Diego, but old man Gates, he proves us wrong every single year.
And yeah.
Until he is retired, I still think he'll be able to post low wide receiver 1 type numbers.
Yeah, you mean tight end 1 numbers? Yeah, I agree with you, and I mean, he was the second highest scoring tight end last year, which is more of an indictment on the tight ends and how poor of consistency they show during the regular season. So
it was a very bad year for tight ends last year.
Then we got a lot of, I mean, obviously Jimmy Graham, that offense in New Orleans kind of changed up to more of a run oriented offense, and you know Drew Brees had a really bad year by Drew Brees' standards. And then you had, you know, the young guy or Julius Thomas battled injuries, and Jordan Cameron was hurt. And also you had guys like Zach Ertz who kind of turned out to not be as much of a part of the offense as we thought he was going to be. So there's lots of question marks. And once again with tight ends this year, there's still a ton of question marks. Rob Gronkowski is probably the most surefire bet if you're drafting tight ends. I wouldn't really take any of these guys, you know, maybe before the 4th or 5th round at least, just because other than Rob Gronkowski, and maybe Jimmy Graham, too, because of Seattle. But those are the only two I'm thinking of right now in terms of a high-end tight end.
Yeah, if I don't land Rob Gronkowski at the back end of round 1 or the in round 2, I agree with you. I'm not going to take a tight end until at least round 6 or so, especially when you can get a guy, like we mentioned with Gates, a guy like Dwayne Allen with Indianapolis who proved to be a legitimate red zone threat. Or even his counterpart in Kobe Fleener, who proved to be the possession-type receiver out of the tight ends for Indianapolis last year. So he saw 7 targets in 4 out of the last 5 games.
We're talking about Fleener here, right?
Yeah, Fleener there, and scored 14. No, he didn't score that many touches. That's kind of his career. That's his career numbers. 1, 2, 3, 8 touchdowns last year. Excuse me. But when you got tight end production that you can get that late in the draft, it just makes more sense if you're not able to land Gronkowski or Graham just to wait on guys and address the needs that you have on the rest of your team.
Absolutely. And I think the one guy people are really going to reach for, and whether or not this turns out to be right or wrong is, you know, not something that I currently know right now, but it's Travis Kelce on the Kansas City Chiefs.
Like, bingo.
Yeah. That's somebody's going to draft him, you know, in the third or fourth round, and they're going to be either very happy they did or very disappointed. And I would lean more towards the disappointed part right now, even though I love the guy's upside. I just, you know, the Kansas City offense is something that I don't really trust is all.
Yeah. Travis Kelce is a very, very interesting fantasy option this year.
Led the league in yards after the catch for tight ends. That's the one stat people love.
It's a great stat.
Yeah.
And the majority of his targets are within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So they're all high percentage passes that he is going to be getting.
Yeah. But we saw Ladarius Green kind of do the same thing. That's the one, like, he was taking, like, slant routes to the house, and everybody's like, oh, it's just a matter of time before he does this consistently, and he hasn't done it yet. So that's...
Yeah,
that's
but my... he also, Travis Kelce doesn't have Antonio Gates, who is a future Hall of Famer, sitting in front of him, too.
Well, he had Anthony Fasano, and now he's gone, so yeah.
He did
snipe so many touchdowns, Fasano. Fasano, you touchdown sniper.
He was. That is so true. But Travis Kelce, when you got a quarterback like Alex Smith who struggles as much as he does throwing the ball down the field, I got to think that Travis Kelce is going to be he's got to be at least the number two receiving target in Kansas City. I know you got Jeremy Maclin in the fold, and you still have Jamal Charles as your running back, but
yes.
When you got a guy who you're labeling as Baby Gronk, I think you're going to see a big uptick in production from him this
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, taking a look at the Kansas City Chiefs, I just wanted to pull up their schedule here real quick. You can keep talking about them if you want, but I just want to see kind of what they're dealing with. Because, I mean, the AFC West, I think, is a kind of an interesting division. It's kind of in a bit of a transition. You got the Broncos, who I think are still going to be a solid team, but I don't think they'll be as good as they were before. And now you have the Oakland Raiders, who are slowly becoming a pretty competent defense. They're like almost out of like that horrible area that they've been in for the last 10 years. So I kind of wonder if the Chiefs, like what this division is going to mean in this season, and if it's going to be a very difficult one for offenses to play in.
Well, last year, recent memory or recent history is anything that we can look at, last year the Broncos finished as the eighth worst unit against tight ends.
Oh, really?
They're giving up 8.5 points per week, according to ESPN's fantasy points against chart. So, and then the Raiders were three spots behind them, giving up 8.1 points per week to opposing tight ends. So,
okay, so maybe I'm completely off base then by saying that the defenses have any semblance of competence, I guess, at least.
The best defense against tight ends was the Chargers, and they only gave up 5.4 points per week and gave up only three touchdowns on the season. So,
gotcha.
If you're looking at matchups, San Diego was the toughest against the tight ends in that division.
Gotcha. All right. So never mind what I just said then about the defenses. I mean, I think the Raiders though are getting slowly better. But so Travis Kelce, we're not too worried about his schedule or anything. I mean, they start off with the Texans on September 13th as their first game, and then they have the Broncos, the Packers, the Bengals. Just, you know, all those teams are teams you can definitely score on. So I think his schedule is not really anything to scream about, and obviously sometimes schedule can be overrated. I'm just kind of throwing that out there as a variable. But So Travis Kelce, do you think you would reach for him? I guess if you really wanted a tight end.
If I miss out on Gronkowski and Graham, if I'm going to pull the trigger in the first six rounds or so, it'll be on Travis Kelce, and it won't be on a guy like Greg Olsen or Julius Thomas or Martellus Bennett.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the guy you really like. I know Eric Moody really loves Martellus Bennett, and I actually kind of agree with him. I mean, he was one of the better tight ends last year, but
he was. And Bennett's always been a consistent fantasy tight end. He dominates in the month of September and then kind of falls off. But
yeah, you're right.
He gets a new offensive coordinator in Adam Gase, who just made Julius Thomas one of the top tight ends in football. So obviously Gase knows how to game plan his tight ends in each week. So
yeah,
I got to think that Martellus Bennett is still going to be a mid-level tight end one in fantasy football.
I agree with you. All right, well, we'll end it there, and we'll continue our talk about tight ends. We'll also get into the defenses a little bit tomorrow, and we still haven't even talked about the quarterbacks yet. So we'll continue with all that. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Once again, you know, check us out on our website. We have a lot of good stuff for you. We're still trying to work on the mock draft code, which for some reason is giving us a lot of problems, but that should be up hopefully by the end of the week. And check us out on Twitter. Josh Mensch is always on there, as am I. And we also have, you know, the Fantasy Pro stuff. Sign up for that if you can, to really help support our site and help support your ability to have a good fantasy team. So Josh Mensch, thank you so much for coming on today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, George.
Just listen to the Fantasy Football Helpers podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Now give me a big bowl of pie with some ice cream on it. Good.